Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Maureen O'Arapa, kia ora katoa and welcome to our weekly program Energise Yourself, an Arrow FM 92.7 New Zealand On Air initiative. The purpose of this program is to bring you people who are involved in sport and recreation, health and well-being and fitness and exercise, with the purpose to encourage listeners to get active. One of our bylines is that we like to remind people that everybody can move something and motion changes emotion. Our guest this morning is Mike Kenworthy. He's down in Wellington, coming to you live from Wellington, and Mike has a wide and diverse experience in health and fitness and exercise. He tells his story better than I do. Marina, Mike.
Morning. How are you, Al?
Yeah, good, thanks. Perhaps if we start, Mike, by just asking you the question, tell us about your background and how you got interested in health and wellness.
Oh, a long story. I've always been involved in sport. When I started, I suppose, as a six-year-old, getting up playing rugby on a Saturday morning. Yeah. Back in those days, there wasn't any ripper rugby. It was all put your boots on and play contact rugby, and away we went.
Yep.
And that was early Saturday mornings on the frosty old days over in Whanganui.
Yep.
where I grew up and went to school.
Yep.
And that was the start of it, and I enjoyed it so much. It's just something I never gave up till later in life. But that was the start of it all, and that being in that team environment with all your mates,
yep,
getting out there and doing stuff, it was awesome.
Yeah,
and that's sort of where it all started, and then it led on into school. You carry on in life just doing the things you love.
Yep.
In the summer at school, we all used to play cricket back in the day.
Yeah, were you any good, Mike?
No good at cricket. Didn't last long at cricket.
Yeah.
Summer sport, took up swimming then, because in those days we were lucky enough at primary schools in Whanganui, Tauro School, we had a swimming pool at the school, so we all had swimming lessons and did swimming in the summer, which, I'd love to see all primary schools keep that up nowadays, how important it is to learn how to swim. Mm. And then you just carried on, and then I suppose the next step was getting it intermediate.
Yep.
Things got a bit more serious then with the rugby, managed to make the first 15 at the Rutherford Intermediate in Whanganui.
Mm-hmm.
And cricket was in the first 11 at the cricket team then for a couple of years. And then, of course, we moved to secondary school. And back then, going to Whanganui Boys College, it was then, I was only a lot smaller then, I suppose, playing rugby, but I managed to make the first 15 in Form 4, second year at secondary school, which was quite an honour, because we did a two-week tour of the South Island in one of the holidays.
Yes.
So I was the youngest in the team, made the team, and we did that two-week trip was quite an eye-opener.
Yeah, it would have been a fantastic experience.
Oh, unbelievable meeting, being billeted out. I think we played five different schools, starting from Nelson Boys High and went down to Gore, played at Gore College and did our round over the 2 weeks holiday. Yeah. Not being the best academically at school, wasn't very interested in all that stuff, so I try to make as many teams as possible. So you'd go away on these school trips representing the school in rugby or tennis or what athletics, you know, whatever I could to get out of schoolwork, I was going. And that's what happens. And so my dad, when I was old enough, said, "Mate, you need to leave school, go and get a job."
Yeah.
And away it went. So I had the fifth form it was then. I think I left school then at fifth form and become a panel beater, tradesman.
Yes.
Spent, 4 or 4.5 years doing the trade, I think it took. And in those times, was playing rugby.
Yes.
And in the summer, I rowed. Rode for the Union Boat Club, which started at school.
Yes.
So we went to Māori Cup. I forgot about that. Māori Cup.
Yes.
Got a second place in the fours.
Yep.
At the Māori Cup back there. So when I left school, went round for the Union Boat Club for all those years and played rugby. So that was... that was our sort of life after there while I was an apprentice panel beater doing all the rugby and made the under 21 Whanganui rep side for rugby. Yes. and went to the New Zealand rowing champs 4 or 5 times for the Union Boat Club.
Brilliant.
And then I reached, finished my apprenticeship and then decided to head off to Australia. Went to Perth. Lived in Perth for about 18 months. Played a bit of rugby there. It wasn't very strong over there, the rugby then.
Yep.
And got involved in a bit of surfing, enjoying the surf life. Then come back home.
Yep.
And then got playing rugby again. And joined the surf club, Castle Cliff Surf Club. And we then got involved in surf canoeing, which is like a 4-man canoe crew. So you do canoe races, you start on the sand on the beach, and something, the gun would go, you grab your canoe, the four of you, jump in it, race out to a buoy, round the buoy and back again. First one back was the winner. And also they'd do a canoe rescue, so they'd have a patient out at the buoy, so you race out there, pick the patient up and bring them back.
Yep.
So in Whanganui then, Cuscliff Beach was a real goer, families, lots of people, but out at Kaiwi, my whānau, there was no surf lifesavers, so we decided to go out there and start a surf lifesaving club.
Mm-hmm. So when you say we, Mike, who's we?
Well, our surf crew,
yes.
the canoe crew,
yes.
and a couple of the other guys that were the swimmers and rescue, we went, decided that we'd set up the flags and just get it going, because there's no one there. Then the boys, I didn't actually do this because I was away at the time, but the boys decided to raise some money and in the canoe crew they paddled down the coast from New Plymouth to my whānau.
Yep.
Took about 3 days, to make everyone aware that we're out at my whānau.
Yeah.
So from then on we represented my whānau at all the surf carnivals.
Oh, brilliant. Wow.
Yeah.
So you were trendsetters.
Well, back then,
yep.
And the canoe crew we had, the four of us, we were all, we were competitive.
Yeah.
We wanted to win these things. So we set up our own training program and when we discovered who made the surf canoes,
yes,
we got hold of the guy. I think his name was Mackay or McKenzie, used to make them.
Yep.
They were quite heavy. It took the four of us to lift it and carry it out. But we approached him, put our own money into it, and got him to make our own one.
Yeah.
Half the weight of the others. So it took two to lift it out.
Ah.
Yeah. And, yeah,
very cunning.
And changed the design of the rudder, because the rudders used to be quite small. We got it made big so we could turn quicker at the buoy.
Ah.
All these little things.
Yeah.
And away we went. And we were turned out one of the crews to beat all around New Zealand.
Brilliant.
The canoe crew was the top crew. We used to train, like on a weekend, we'd get in the boat at the beach. I don't know anyone knows Whanganui, the Whanganui River.
Mm.
We'd paddle up the coast, turn into the Whanganui River and go right up to Upuck.
Yep.
And back as a training session. Take about 4 hours just sitting in that thing paddling away. But we were competitive. So from 1975 to 1980, we were the dominant canoe crew. I think we won about 4 national titles in that time, a couple of silvers and a bronze over that 5 years.
Yeah.
Now we were the crew to beat. They were fantastic days of the developing and of course we still had to do our weekends sitting on the beach, you know, doing surf patrol, making sure no one drowned or pulling people out of the water if they got into trouble.
Yeah.
So they were brilliant days.
That's a real rough coast to be surf lifesaving on, isn't it?
It's very
quickly
it
changeable
is.
Weather and high seas quickly and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, and we had, at surf carnivals, we've had the last one I went to was Mount Maunganui in 1980. Surf boats snap in half coming down. The waves were so big and rough.
Yeah.
And our advantage was coming from the west coast. We were used to that rough surf and developed our little program, when to take off, not just to race into it and get swamped by a wave and all that. And I think that paid to our advantage at a lot of the surf carnivals around New Zealand. The beaches where they held them went rough, like Castle Cliff or my funny beach. Yeah. So they were good old days and being involved in that and stuff. So that was summer sport. And then, of course, rugby in the winter.
Yeah.
So that carried on. I was lucky enough to make the Whanganui rep side.
What position did you play, Mike?
I was a number 7. I was a loose forward. I like to get out there and smash those first fives. a bit of a story that in 1980, Whanganui plays Taranaki every Queen's birthday weekend on the Monday morning. We always had a game. Then everyone went to the races after that. So it's a Monday morning game, 10 o'clock, Taranaki. We always played in Whanganui at Spriggan's Park. We're playing a game there, and I was on the back of the line out marking Graham Murray. All Black flanker.
Yeah.
And
did he school you?
No, I was beating him to the ball, and because that was my challenger.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who's this guy? Yeah, I could play out there, you know, him, you cocky young bugger, as you do.
I don't care who he is,
So rules were a bit different than they are now in those days, you know, when a ruck, you could lie in it, and that these guys could come and ruck you off the ball and push over the top. So halftime went, had a big talk, come back out. You know, in those days, the crowd in the morning, you know, there'd be, nearly 5,000 to 6,000, 7,000 people around the Spriggan's Park sitting on the bank on the far side. So here we go. We go from a line out, head out, gets out the wing, get a tackle out on the other side, and the ruck forms. I'm over the ball. Next minute, the old Taranaki forwards come flying in, and I get rucked in the air, and it ripped the bottom part of my left ear off.
Wow.
you know, right in front of the crowd on the bank, and they're all going nuts. And I had to, I got about, I think it was about 12 internal and 6-7 external stitches to get put together. So, in those days, you know, if you, you were beating their top player, you got dealt to.
Absolutely. Yeah. Either so, by him or his mates.
Or by the team.
Yeah.
So, that, you know, they were good experiences. Playing for Whanganui, and I ended up hitting my blazer pocket in that time. But
brilliant.
And then sort of that year, 1980, I met this lovely lady and ended up getting married and heading off to Australia.
Ah, back to Aussie. Yeah, back to Aussie. And where did you settle over there?
So we settled in Sydney. In the end, we had a big holiday and, you know, a change of plans, decided to stay there because we were going to head off to Europe and do other things, but liked it so much. Nice weather, good surf, you know, all the things. So we started off there and I thought, oh, had a surf ski because I love surfing. So I didn't want to join a surf club, so just wanted weekends on the surf ski in the summer. Started out doing a bit of surfing, and winter comes, so joined the rugby. Rugby wasn't that strong either there then, just played for a club. But after about 2 or 3 months here, we ended up going to partnership and buying a coffee shop.
Yep.
In Chatswood. We lived in Chatswood then. So I, the work-wise, I couldn't play rugby anymore and had to work on the weekends and do all that. But in the meantime, the part of the arcade we were in, there's a butcher shop. A young Kiwi guy owned the butcher shop who did martial arts as well. Because before I left New Zealand, the guys I flattered with, one of them did the martial arts style. So we used to do a little bit back then. So I sort of had an interest. Yeah. And then talking to this guy in the butcher shop, he says, oh, we do this style called Kyokushin, just up the road.
Yep.
So I said to my mate, oh, let's go and try this out, because my mate, he'd been looking at different clubs, you know. And we went there, and here we go. This is full on the style. And the first night there, talked to the instructor, a guy called Howard Lippman. Yep, you're good boys coming there. So we, 2 hour sessions they were, but then, and we get going, and the last half hour is always sparring, doing a bit of fighting.
Yep.
You know, and being a rugby player and, you know, all that thing, you know, I handle these guys, you know. Was I mistaken? So you soon learn, you know, respect is important. In a dojo, you know, you think you can give them a hiding. The harder I went, the harder they went.
Yep.
And afterwards, they sort of say to you, if you want to learn, you know, just take your time and go from there. And that, I was hooked after that first night. This is the style. This is completely different to what I was learning from the interest I had in New Zealand with the flatmate, you know. And then, so it went on from there. So a martial art or karate style like that, it's completely four-year training. There's no winter or summer duration. You just got into it. So that's what got me started there.
Yep.
Kept the surf skiing up, you know, free time. We used to go up the coast and keep surf ski the waves out with the surfers out there. That was that used to be fun, because I don't know if people know about the surf ski, you scrap yourself on, you sit on it like a surfboard, but you scrap yourself on and you paddle on the wave, you know. So you sort of drop in the wave a little bit later than the surfers on the surfboard, so they used to get a bit grumpy. And a few times you'd be going along and they'll surfboard guys will pull their board in the water and let it fire out at you, you know, because you've got in their path. So that was good days dodging a few surfboards. And the best experience I had on there was surfing at one of the points, I forget what it's called, but surfing with the dolphins.
Yeah.
You know, you're out there right on the point in the middle of nowhere and you see these fins come up and you start paddling to catch the wave and next thing they're flying them beside you and you realise they're dolphins. Well, yeah. That was a really great experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Surreal.
But, you know, they were the good old days. But yep. then karate took a hold of me from there. Where I trained was pretty lucky that we had a Japanese instructor that trained with the master, Master Masoyama.
Yep.
He was like a uchideshi, which is a living student. He'd trained there for 4 or 5 years and then got sent to Australia to promote and teach.
Yes.
And he did his years round, a year round all the dojos and ended up being sponsored by Howard Lippman, our instructor in Chatswood. So he was our instructor.
Yep.
So he put on extra classes and wanted, to teach tournament fighting.
Yeah.
So we turned up. The first session he ran, I remember there would have been about 20 of us, and we did techniques, 1,000 representatives of all these different techniques.
Yes.
That he'd shown, 1,000 at a time. The next session come, there was only about 10 of us.
Shit.
The third session come, I was the only one there.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. he still did it. And yeah. then we created a bond and developed that relationship with him as a personal instructor for tournament fighting and fitness and all the things that you know, he learnt from the master in Japan and stuff. Yeah. So then we built that relationship and on it went. So, you know, when tournament training come around, we'd be 5 o'clock in the morning, be knocking on my bedroom window door, come on, get up, we've got to do a session.
Yeah.
So we'd do a morning session, then I'd have to go to work. By then I was sold the coffee shop and was panel beating again.
Yep.
Go panel beating, then come home, then go training at night, and that was our routine 7 days.
Yep.
7 days a week for a couple of years, you know. Yep. And then so got into tournament fighting, ended up becoming the Australian middleweight champion, beating all the Aussies. That was yep. good fun.
That'd put a smile on your face.
Yeah. Yeah. It ended up representing Australia at the 4th World Tournament.
Yep.
Over in Japan and getting through to the 3rd round, fighting one of the Japanese top fighters, a guy called Masuda.
Yep.
Who ended up coming 3rd at that yep. tournament.
Yep.
So it's a knockout. You
yep.
you do your rounds, you win, you carry on till you lose and you're out. So that was a huge experience. But lucky for me that Kaneko, my instructor, managed to get me in as a uchideshi, a living student for one of the top Japanese fighters at the time called Keiji Senpei.
Yes.
So I lived there and trained in the dojo over there for 6 weeks afterwards with them and sort of learnt the lifestyle and how they trained and why the Japanese were so good at the time, you know.
Yeah.
Their top fighters then, none of them worked. They just trained 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
You know, and their sole purpose was to get out there and win and be champions and do all that.
Yeah.
So that was a huge experience. But I've got to say, I've got to say thank you to my wife. And we just had a child, you yeah. know. She was only 1.5 years old when I went to Japan. She allowed yeah. me to go there because of the passion I had for what we did and yes. stay that time and do all that. So you can mix these things in your life,
yes.
You know, having children and family life and things, other responsibilities if you do it correctly and that,
yeah.
Which was great.
Yep.
Then sort of after all that, we decided, because the child was now 3 years old, let's get back to New Zealand. We don't want to bring our children up in Australia.
Yeah.
And went back to Whanganui.
Brilliant.
And then I thought, well, all this knowledge I've built, I want to share with people, because what karate can do for you physically, mentally, and all those things, opened up my own school.
Brilliant.
So we have a Kenworthy dojo, and then, you know, first night only one student turns up.
Yes.
And then it just built from that. You get a reputation, people will come and try and test you out from all these different styles that were around at the time, you know, which was interesting. And it's just built up from there.
Yeah.
And from our dojo in Whanganui, we've produced, you know, some New Zealand champions, fighters to fight at the world tournaments in Japan that have held their own.
Yep.
And they've developed and gone on and stayed on, you know, and so I have a big school up there now, and then we moved to Wellington and opened a little dojo here. While we moved to Wellington, my wife works for Sport New Zealand, and so she got a job down here. In the meantime, my life had changed. I worked, when we went back to Whanganui, I didn't want a penalty, the money wasn't that good, but working at the freezing works was. So that's where I started at the freezing works, did, you know, nearly 14 years there, and then I got approached about how would I look at being a rugby development officer. Whanganui were looking for one, and I'm going, whoa, you know. They asked me, and it wasn't about, I said, geez, I hadn't played rugby or been involved for years. And they said, well, it wasn't about that. It's about how you're known in the community.
Yeah.
We can teach you or put you on courses, you know, coaching courses and all the other stuff. But knowing, because Whanganui region went from, you know, Waverley right through Martin up into Hunterville, Waiuru, Ruapehu and round there, all the rugby clubs in that area. And a lot of the club captains then were people I played rugby with back in the day, so they wanted someone who could communicate with the people and deliver what they wanted. So I accepted that role, and away we went. Most enjoyable job I've ever had, as well as seeing the development and change in what you can do going into schools, trying to get kids active, and then coach education. I went on all these courses and learned all these things through New Zealand Rugby, you know, about nutrition and training methods and all the different things. And it all, the two combined, martial arts and rugby, have a lot in common.
Yeah.
When it comes to the training stuff. Yeah. So I was lucky enough to do that role. And then when we moved to Wellington, I got got a contract with Wellington Rugby in New Zealand. And I was put out with a club out at Wainui Amata.
Yep.
Which was very interesting. Different completely with the club out there, with all the people living out there. It's changed now. It's grown really big, but that was really a great job, just working with the people in the community out there, and then coach education, training the boys. Like a few of the boys that I trained up and got into contracts overseas, they're still over there playing for in France or Italy, earning good money, but you know, it was educating the island boys about diet and nutrition.
Yep.
You know, at the end of the rugby season, that a couple of the boys would weigh 110 kilos and come back the start of the next season 130, 140 kilos, yeah. You know.
Yeah, so
They love their food and eating.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that was awesome, just about living healthy, getting in a regular routine, keeping up some exercise, you know, and just enjoying what you're doing. That's the main thing. But then, you know, then you reach an age, retirement comes in, COVID come in, so our contracts were expired. So that sort of changed a bit. And so I've just, you know, I'm at a retirement age, so I just carry on now with my martial arts and looking after my grandkids. And
Fantastic.
And living life. That's sort of been my life. But I must say, if you can get involved in a sport that you love and it's got the resource there to help you and get you on, do it.
Yes. So, Mike, there's a bigger story here, and we try to keep this program to 30 minutes, which is up. No.
Should have I talked that long?
It's been absolutely fantastic and enlightening. And listeners, I know something of Mike's history and background in Kyokushin Karate, and he's been responsible for guiding and managing an organisation in New Zealand here which has, at last count, 16 dojos throughout the country. And there's a bigger story there, so we're going to have to get Mike back because there's a wealth of knowledge there. I know that for a fact. Must say, Mike, in conclusion, that it's been lovely listening to you. What a great story. And if you're out there, folks, just remember, I mean, Mike's done all this around being a father and now a grandfather, and there's a whole backstory there too. So can't thank you enough, Mike, for being on the show. We will do it again, and I've made some notes. We will go on from you know, your Wellington days with the rugby and Wainui Omata, because again, I can tell you folks that Wainui Omata's never been the same since Mike left, rugby wise. So there you go, Mike. Thank you so much.
And my pleasure, Al.
And you will hear from me. Thank you.
Awesome.
And here's some outro music.